Monday, 2nd of October, 1944. Dear folks, I haven't received any mail from you for some time, although I've had three from Elsie. Yesterday we were given permission to mention the names of towns within 25 miles of our position, providing they were not in enemy hands. I've not told you the names of places we've passed, so I'll start from the beginning and I'll tell you the route of the Great March, which was temporarily stopped in Holland. I can't remember all the details, and I may make a few mistakes, but I'll check on them later. I find it hard to concentrate on this letter because there's a hell of a row going on outside. I'm writing in a room which has been lent to the regiment as a restroom. The house is just within the boundary of a town which you wouldn't be able to pronounce if I wrote its name. I came down here for an evening's quiet, but the walls and ceilings are shaking and a piece of glass has just slipped out the window beside me. Two blokes have just come in from a walk. A bomb decided them. It's all quiet now, so I'll have another try. They're dishing up coffee and biscuits now, and I'm trying hard to find where it's coming from. Well, a week after we landed, we were in a position some 3 miles from Bayeux, and within range of that much-shelled town, Tilly. A little to the southwest of Tilly is a little village called Ottot, which we pounded for days. The Allies, or rather the British 50th Division, were having one day in and one day out of Ottot, sharing it with the Germans. One day we fired 200 rounds between four of us to support a patrol of 14 men who went in and out of the village to capture prisoners. They caught two. We stayed in that position for 10 days and during that time our troop commander was killed. You remember in the fighting for Tilly, the BBC said that artillery had fired red smoke shells to indicate a target to the RAF. That was fired by Fred Davis's gun. The sky was full of fighters and as the smoke went over, so they peeled off and fired rockets and machine guns at it. It's lovely to watch the typhoons. They circle round and then dive straight down with smoke streaming from an exhaust and little puffs of smoke show when they fire their rockets. The noise is unnerving. I couldn't describe it. At the time of the big raid on Caen, we were in a new position between Caen and Tilly, nearer Tilly than Caen. The name of the nearest village was Fontenay-le-Panel, which had been a job to capture. Big jerry tanks lay on the roadside, blown to pieces, and on each side were graves of British and Germans. I'd been up all night, and early in the morning we saw the RAF come over in streams. They flew in an almost endless line, and the ACAC fire was terrible. Several planes burst into flame and plunged down or else blew into pieces in the air. Later that day we fired a barrage for hours in sweltering heat and the paint burned off the barrel. Jerry was walled again and he hardly moved. That night we had our first taste of bombing. The whole area of a mile and a half square was packed with guns. At night their flashes ripped along like those modern pin tables do when you score 1,000. He dropped flares which made us feel naked and then bombed like the devil. We dived underground and waited while the ground shook and the AA fire streamed up in torrents. From that position, we went back for rest and overhaul. We'd been in Normandy 7 weeks and had been in action, which means ready to fire, day and night. After the rest, the first thing I remember was a little town or village named something like Jurgs, which we have always called Jerks. It was here that we had our little encounter with the Jerry self-propelled gun, when Dougie Smith was wounded. His layer killed and another sergeant badly hit. We withdrew about 2 miles after that and heard that we were to give close support to an armoured division, which was going to drive south and then east to capture a big hill and cut off all the enemy holding on in Villiers Bocage area. I remember being very excited over that news and I looked at this self-propelled and wondered if there was anything I could have done to it so it would not break down. I got talking about shooting over open sights and made sure everyone knew what to do if it was necessary to shoot up enemy tanks. I've never known the blokes to listen so carefully and make sure they really do know what they're told. We all thought we should have to shoot our way out along every yard. What happened, I can't remember, except that we had our finest night drive and I tapped half a bottle of whiskey at 2 a.m. The whiskies reminded me. At 3 a.m. we were lost. I turned off the road, following the rear lights of the gun in front, and found myself in a field, with only one vehicle in front and all the odds and ends of the battery behind. We had a chank, and the number one of the leading gun wanted to try to find the others. I was off for staying put, mounting guard and waiting till morning. I didn't fancy running into a couple of anti-tank guns in the dark. We had another dose of fire water, and away we went onto the road again, and as luck would have it, right into the middle of regimental headquarters. We followed them, and at 5:30 went into action alongside the rest of the battery. I was dead beat, and we had to rest the others first, so they laid down and slept until midday, while I potted about. I laid down afterwards and slept for several hours in the boiling sun, and woke up feeling like a crab boiled red. The next day, our troop went off on a special job. Jerry had dug in on the other side of the river, and we were going forward to lay a smoke screen for an attack. After 3 or 4 miles, a colonel stopped us, and when our officer told him what we were doing, he said, "You're crossing the FDLs now." The FDLs is a forward defence line. Past that's no man's land and Jerry. We went on for another mile and came across some of the recce corps hidden in hedges. By that time it was dark and we took up our position ready for the morning. We were told there was absolutely no infantry in front and that Jerry was 1,000 yards away. The orders were rifles handy, no smoking and talking, and dig in. Three of us went on guard and three dug the trench, hour about, until the dug was deep enough. After that, the three not on guard went to sleep. At 4 a.m. I went on guard. At 5:30, the troop commander told me that a patrol of 14 Jerry had been within 200 yards of us. Phew! The troop moved away from there without firing a round at about 8:30. Mortar shells were landing 100 yards to our left as we went off. It was a good job we never fired during the night. He'd have seen our gun flashes and shelled the devil out of us. At the next position, we rejoined the battery, and I left to take over another gun in B Group. Where we were, I haven't got the foggiest. I know one thing. If I don't finish this letter now, I'll get writer's cramp. I'll check up on our movements and write another instalment later.